harping on war sweet facts and griping about the great things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country. And you're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the real life, I'm fighting in a fort and I'm deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Singing, be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying teeth. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man, you walking on the fight beside me.
Yes, when you're running on my down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. I'm going to play a very interesting recording by a very informed commentator. It's about the the Indian blockades and disruptions that have occurred over the past few weeks. I'm going to be I have mentioned this issue before, and I want to make clear right from the beginning, when I say the India, it's not all Indians. In fact, it's a radical fringe among some Indians who've been responsible for this, and very important allies, perhaps even assisting with instigating, maybe even funding, among the fanatical anti-carbon group in Canada, the fanatical radical environmentalists. Not an environmentalist like myself. I believe in protecting the environment. I'm opposed to polluting rivers and to holus bolus just hacking down trees. But there's a big difference between that and some of these fanatics who basically would like to see the country not have any further development. Well, this is a a video that I found extremely interesting. And I'd like to thank Lawrence, who writes or wrote for Your War News, for passing it on to me. I think it's a very effective film, and one I think that's well worth
listening to, and I'm having, just as I've had some trouble before, having a little bit of trouble getting this up and running, and if you'll just bear with me for a minute, I'll see if we can get this this going here. I'm not quite sure why we have so much trouble with these things. Okay. This is a film which will take up excuse me most of the program today, if I can ever actually get it up here. This is an issue that is extremely important in Canada. It has been massively mishandled by the federal government, and as I pointed out yesterday, part of that goes back to the fact that much of our political leadership, particularly the Liberal Party and the Socialist New Democratic Party and the Green Party, are all agreed on basically that up until very, very recently, that is, they're coming close to power, Canada was a terribly racist country. Whites are guilty for horrible mistreatment of Native people, and it's basically the usual white guilt narrative. Well, the problem is, if you ideologically say you're wrong, not that we may not have made a mistake or two, but basically we're wrong, we're evil. Well, where do you go from there? You basically said that the other people, the other side in this, are righteous and good, and you're evil. Having said that, how do you oppose what these people who you've already said are the are the good guys? How do you oppose what they're doing? Even if they're breaking the law. Well, I mean, you've almost said that you don't have a right to an opinion. That is, in my opinion, an extremely dangerous position to be in. And that is one of the reasons for the impotence of the federal government. I mean, they're ideologically, their heart just isn't in it. I mean, they've already essentially pleaded guilty. How can you oppose the efforts of the people that you've said are the righteous ones and you're the bad ones? This is, I think, an extremely good video by a woman who broadcasts under the name of Pretty Polly.
Today's video is going to be maybe a little longer than usual because I've got quite a few topics to cover. But the way I see it, they all relate together. And for me, it's mixed up with my own history and I think how I became the person that I am. What I'm going to talk about today are the Wet'suwet'en protests. It's really, to me, it's almost a foreign insurgency into Canada, and I'll explain why I think that as we go along. I'm going to show how it has similarities to the FLQ terrorist group that was active in Quebec, Canada, French-speaking province of Canada, for years. I'm going to talk about these other countries' involvement in the FLQ and the formation and training of the FLQ. But if you're not Canadian, don't worry, this is not all about Canada. However, I think the history is very interesting. And surprisingly, I was surprised at this when I did the research. We've got ties to the Black Panthers, North Korea, and the Cultural Revolution that I talk about in regards to John Brockman and that sort of thing. So I'm going to be looking at Q posts in the end half of this video. We're going all over the place, buckle up, get a cup of coffee, do what you need to do. We're going to start by looking at this. This is one of the leaders of this so-called solidarity protests. Anti-colonial. That's the key word to keep in your mind. Anti-colonialism protests. She's out in BC and she's stirring the crap out there. And she's kind of a leader. This blue check says, a closer look at some of the key players in the Lower Mainland blockades and protests. So this woman, turns out she's from California. Her name's Natalie Knight. She's from California. She's not Canadian. Just to give you, I should give you a flavor of what these idiots look like when they're doing their protests. Here's about a minute.
The train's not stopping.
They've jumped in front of trucks. They light the fires all over. There's been 30 or more fires on the train tracks. I've heard that they've set cars on fire. This morning I woke up to a picture of a small airplane that had been clearly set on fire in Toronto. I don't know if it's connected. But I've heard also that in Quebec, these protesters are now starting to carry AK-47s. You see, it is escalating. And our government is completely gaslighting us and saying, we just need dialogue with these people. They're doing the same thing they did with the FLQ, turning a blind eye until it's an emergency, and then they'll roll in the army. This could take years. It could take years. That's how long it took in Quebec. I mean, the blockades are serious. They're blocking the rail lines so we can't get supplies from place to place. They were blocking the bridges across to the United States and the entries between Canada and the United States. They were blocking the highways. And the police have largely done absolutely nothing to stop this. In 2016, she had been arrested by the RCMP, but released. She was doing another protest. She was occupying a building that they didn't want to have renovated. The RCMP let her go without charge. If they had have charged her, she probably would have been deported. And she wouldn't be leading these revolutionary cells in British Columbia right now. Fail on the RCMP again, or were they instructed from above? We don't know. But they should have done something. As for the authenticity of these Wet'suwet'en solidarity protests, I just want to point out that even the state broadcaster couldn't avoid telling the truth forever. On February 22nd, they did a little piece where they admit all 20 elected First Nation councils along the route support the project that these fools are supposedly fighting against on behalf of the First Nations. So, as I've said, they've had to admit now that a lot of the First Nations communities want these gas pipelines, so it's beginning to derail the narrative of the solidarity protesters. So what do? They just shift goalposts. Indigenous youth in BC say protest goes far beyond pipeline issue. Revolution is alive in Canada. Protests spawn climate and Indigenous rights movement. This is part of the NGO system, where civil society organizations come in and they steer the civilians. They call it humanitarianism. They pretend all sorts of things. Now, occasionally, very rarely, the police have broken up some of the blockades. And when that happens, the anarchist cells in various areas activate in solidarity. And they do damage elsewhere. In this article from yesterday, the Hamilton police say they arrested 4 people. All four people had been involved in separate other incidents of violence, typical Marxist causes, in the past. Will they be more harshly dealt with now? I doubt it. They're probably already back and protesting again. And you see what the anarchists put out. They put this out. If others are targeted and do get arrested, know that we have your back. See you at the next blockade, they wrote on their blog. Tell me, where do groups of anarchists get money? Tell me, where do they get money? How are they getting people out of jail? How are they paying people's legal costs? How are they busing people around? How are they getting the signs? All of those questions. I don't know the answer. There was an excellent blog post that I read the other day. What the research proves is that these protesters, these blockaders, these anti-colonialists, they were well trained well in advance of this particular moment in time, and they had a dry run at their protests last year when Canada had a little baby yellow vest and convoy in protest to Parliament Hill in Canada, again about the oil and gas industry. At the same time as that peaceful movement was happening, these agitators gathered together, also in Ottawa, near Parliament, at a university. And they went on, had a days-long or a week-long training session on how to protest and all the skills necessary for being Marxist agitators. Power Shift Canada is the name of the organization. They had a conference which was paid for by these organizations and more, which received millions in taxpayer funding and foreign foundation money. The conference utilized many facilities across the university campus and had access to huge media resources. It had the full support and backing of this massive publicly funded institution, the university, Ottawa U, and access to millions of dollars of taxpayer and Soros Foundation money. Right through organizations like Tides and more. The proof is out there that this is a coordinated, non-grassroots, big money-backed strategy. And I view it as the exact same strategy that they used at the time of the FLQ and other revolutions that were happening at the same time, all inspired by Marxist, Leninist, anti-colonialist sentiment. One more thing from that blog. It's this guy, Alec J. Ross, okay, and he worked for Hillary Clinton on making Civil Society 2.0.
And what we've done with Secretary Clinton's Civil Society 2.0 program is we've taken one of America's undeniable strengths, the strength of our technology and of our innovators, and we put them to work in service of our diplomatic goals. So what we've done is we've created these things called tech camps, where over a couple days there's very intensive training of grassroots civil society organizations by American technology experts. And this is great because it allows these technology experts the opportunity to sort of give back in a way consistent with their strengths. And it helps the civil society organizations because they are more effective executing against their missions now that they're more savvy about how to harness digital tools. And to date, we've trained more than 800 civil society organizations from 50 countries around the world.
Civil Society 2.0, where they utilize technology to better communicate between these cells, these grassroots groups, these civil society groups. I mean, the FLQ had to use regular phones. We didn't have cell phones. They had to use regular mail. We didn't have fax machines or anything at that time. And they managed. Can you imagine how successful these revolutionary Marxist groups can be today with their decentralized structure, the little cells that they use? By the way, civil society, let's look at what a few places and organizations have to say about this. The UN, civil society is the third sector of society, along with government and business. The UN recognizes the importance of partnering with civil society because it advances the organization's ideals. The EU just published Enabling Civil Society Through National Action Plans one day ago. Civil society in general, as a term, a third way has been used to explain a variety of political courses and ideologies. These ideas were implemented by progressives in the early 20th century. The term was picked up again in the 50s, which is when there was a giant push for this exact type of revolution in countries. I shouldn't put that in quotation marks. It's a real attempt at revolution. Don't forget, John Brockman wrote The Third Culture Beyond Scientific Revolution. And in that, he talks about replacing the old guard, traditional academics, traditional thinkers, with this new cybernetic culture. And cybernetic, I showed you, really translates into technocracy. And technocracy pretty much translates into a green-based, an environment-based communism. That's what it really is, if you dig down. Remember I said that they organized in cells. Look at the description of the methods of Antifa and the descriptions of the method of the FLQ, their Front de Libération du Québec. Antifa is not an interconnected or unified organization, but rather a movement without hierarchical leadership structure, comprising multiple autonomous groups and individuals. Antifa is an organizing strategy, not a group of people. And that really is a good way to look at it. The FLQ, when they described how that organization was structured, they say, the FLQ was a loose association operating as a clandestine cell system. This would be a cell-structured organizational system. And what I want to know is who is in here. I don't have that answer for you today, but I do think it's communist, Marxist, Leninist, revolutionary. Okay, let's finally get on to the part about the FLQ itself. Founded in 1963, trained by both the Palestinian Liberation Organization and some terrorist from Belgium named George Schuiders. We find out a little bit more about George later. And it says they are a Marxist-Leninist terrorist and paramilitary group in Quebec. It conducted a number of attacks between 1963 and 1970. It culminated in the Montreal Stock Exchange bombing in 1969 with the October Crisis in 1970, which began with the kidnapping of British Trade Commissioner James Cross. In the subsequent negotiations, Quebec Labour Minister Pierre Laporte was also kidnapped, and he was murdered by a cell of the FLQ. So it lasted a period of 7 years. That was just the revolutionary period. What I lived through after was when these guys more or less made the laws and declared all people like me to be enemies, their enemies. And the whole of society participated in this. I was born during the period of martial law in Canada, in Quebec. So, it's very personal to me. I didn't live through the terrorist bombings, my parents did, but I lived through the aftermath. And the aftermath I described some of in a video that I did a year and a half ago or so, in June 2018, where I said, I'm gonna go all in on the Q movement, because at that time, what I was looking out at the landscape, especially in my country, and I decided, I don't think my country stands a chance because we don't have the same rights as you do in America. And I also saw the beginning of what I lived through in Quebec, which is a Marxist revolution. And what I can tell you about living through that and being born just as it ended, and then supposedly things will get back to normal. They didn't get back to normal. What happened was all of the demands of the terrorists were met. And the people who formed the government had many of the attitudes of the terrorists. So what happened was Anglophiles, Anglophones, myself, I'm an Anglophone, my family and every other Anglophone family were treated like dirt. Literally like dirt. And we had rocks thrown at us. I ended up in the hospital. My mother had a big vicious dog sicked after her every time she went in her backyard. My family, all Anglos got used to living like this. You had to check your food as it came in. And I remember as a little girl standing at the table after we'd order a pizza and my parents lifting up the pepperoni slices. And sure enough, there were bugs under the pepperoni slices. See, this makes me very emotional. So if you want to see the outpouring of emotion, you can go to the video. I'll link to it in the description box where I talk about how what I see happening in Canada, what I saw back then, being Revolution 2.0, but this time coast to coast. And these Wet'suwet'en solidarity protests, which are not that really, they are the manifestation. This is it, in my opinion. We're here. The next stage is increasing terrorism from this group and their cells, and then their ideas will be incorporated into the government. That's what's going to happen. I'm sorry. That's how these things go. 800,000 people fled Quebec during that time. And of course, Quebec celebrated. That's what they wanted. They wanted the Anglos out. And we left because you can't live like that. So they committed over 160 violent acts, including multiple bombings, kidnappings, murders, bank robberies, and they inspired rioting. I want to show you some pictures. Here's the Montreal Stock Exchange bombing. In case you thought all they did was throw a couple firecrackers into the lobby. No, this was a huge deal. You see all the blown out areas? Some of these pictures are graphic, so please be careful. This is one of the people that they had kidnapped being taken away. This is the result of a mailbox bomb. That is a soldier lying there. Here's a man also commissioned to take the bombs out of the mailboxes. They put them all in all the mailboxes of the upper class neighborhoods. Straight horrifying terrorism. Straight horrifying terrorism. They deface statues, of course, destroy statues. And here's the youth. Vive le FLQ. This was going on. And here's the useful idiots right here. And how is this portrayed in our media now? Most people have no idea. They literally have no idea how bad it was. They killed a single mother of two kids. They killed lots of innocent people. Lots of innocent people died. And how does the press portray it now? Look at FLQ wanted airtime, not revolution. That was from 2010. Here's another guy writing about the FLQ. He was actually the guy who read the FLQ manifesto on air. He wasn't a member of the group, I don't think. Maybe he was. But he just talks about how they're still fighting the battle. Will it ever be done for these French-speaking people looking for a country in North America? He's like, no. And thanks to them, it's sad that we had to be violent, but these people are, they're totalitarian supremacists. I'm not the only one who feels this way. Here's a couple of comments under an article about this. I was behind Roslyn Elementary School when this happened. She's talking about the soldier. A brave man tried to save lives and almost lost his. The rest of the FLQ fled to Cuba and then were let back to Quebec, celebrated by most Quebecois, even landing government jobs. We now have another separatist government back, set on annihilating the English once more. And this was in 2019. This person says, apparently Anglos are the best treated minority in the world and we should thank our lucky stars. Anyone who actually lived through it, anyone who actually knows the real history, must be disgusted. And I'm warning you, that's what we're going through right now with these blockades. Nobody but me that I have seen has made the comparison between the two situations. But again, 7 years. 7 years of it. That's why I'm leaving Canada, because it's over. Now, In that article that I showed you before where the guy said the struggle is still not over, he introduces his story on the FLQ by mentioning that elsewhere in the world, there were other revolutionary movements going on. He says the violence in Quebec was a little different from that which unfolded in several countries. The Black Panthers, the Weathermen in the United States, numerous guerrillas in Latin America, the IRA in Ireland, the ETA in Basque Country, Spain, without forgetting the most publicized revolutionary struggles that were happening at that time in Cuba, Algeria, and Vietnam. Keep all of that in mind as we go forward. In this book, World Terrorism, an Encyclopedia of Political Violence, it talks about the FLQ. And notice what it says here. The FLQ terrorists drew inspiration from the insurgent movements in the developing world, particularly in Algeria, where one of the early FLQ bombers fled to avoid arrest. And in the wiki, it tells us, some of the members were organized and trained by Georges Schuiters, a Belgian revolutionary. FLQ members Normand Roy and Michel Lambert received guerrilla training from the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization in Jordan. Isn't that interesting? What was the PLO up to, by the way, in Jordan? That was Black September. Black September was a conflict fought in Jordan between the Jordanian Armed Forces and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, September 1970. Well, in Canada, the FLQ, who had been trained by these guys, they ran their game for the 7 years, culminating in the October Crisis in 1970. You'll note, they call it a war here. Multinational, interconnected cells, all with the Marxist-Leninist backing. I laugh when it says decisive Canadian victory. I laugh at that because, as I've said, the terrorists' demands were met and the society that was built after conformed to what they wanted. So I'm not sure what they even mean by winning. Raymond Villeneuve, in his wiki, they just brush over that he's a founding member of the Front de Libération du Québec. And then he went on to volunteer for the Parti Québécois and appear on television shows. Later on, he said of the September 11th attacks, I'm really jealous of what happened in New York. Those type of actions, we could never do that. But me, I was thinking about tank trucks. Apparently even Bin Laden has thought about that. Blowing up tank trucks is way easier than hijacking planes. It could happen in Toronto, or it could happen in the West Island of Montreal where there are a lot of Canadians. Can you believe these guys? Praising the attack on the Twin Towers. Saying that he was proud of himself because him and Bin Laden had both thought of tank trucks. And then you notice the little subtle hit at the end there? We could do it in Westmount where there's a lot of Canadians. He means English speakers. The Quebecois, the hardcore, they don't think they're Canadian. They don't. In our federal debates for leadership that just happened this October, the guy from Quebec kept saying, Canada and Quebec, you Canadians, this and that. We will look after ourselves in Quebec. I mean, things are just... at a ridiculous level here right now. And the press doesn't make anything of it. They just ignore it like it's not happening. Here's some of these guys, by the way. You want to get a look at them? This is what they looked like as they walked down the street. But they were terrorists. Here's Georges Schuiters here. We come to find out that in the late 50s, this Georges Schuiters guy went to Algeria for training with the National Liberation Front. He also went to Cuba many times. So he came over to Quebec, and helped found this Quebec Liberation Front, the FLQ. You can see that 1954 to 1962 is when it went on. And then he came over to Quebec and founded the FLQ with some angry Marxist-Leninist losers in Quebec? Was he part of this international Marxist-Leninist group that was causing revolutions all over the place, and even North Korea? I don't know, but it sure looks like it. Something else I found out that's very surprising, another link of the FLQ to a different organization that we've all heard of is the Black Panther Party. In the Royal Commission that was struck after the FLQ crisis, we found out the Black Panther Party and the Front de Libération du Québec, FLQ, were rumored to be planning a rendezvous in a barn in Quebec. And the RCMP burnt the barn down. Not when they were in it, but they burnt the barn down to prevent the meeting. And they got in trouble for it, of course. They got in trouble for stealing membership lists. They got in trouble for tapping the phones. Does that sound like the government wanted the RCMP to stop the FLQ? Doesn't to me. And it makes me understand a little bit why they don't know what to do now about other protest movements that break out. Because they've had their hands slapped so many times. So a little bit of sympathy for the RCMP. Speaking of the Black Panthers, they have a connection to Algeria. It's all coming together. In 1970, they went over to Algeria and opened a branch office or something. Algeria welcomed them because diplomatic ties had been severed between Algeria and the United States. Ironically, the place that they located was on John F. Kennedy Street. Also, either ironically or tellingly, depending on how you want to look at it, 2 weeks before the Black Panthers moved in, it housed diplomatic representatives of the Viet Cong. The Viet Cong delegation has now moved to larger quarters in Algeria, and the Black Panthers took up residence there. Wow. Huh. Starting to get the hints of North Korea now coming in. What have I got next? One of the Black Panthers was a guy called Huey Newton. He didn't go to Algeria, and in fact, the Black Panthers kind of turned their backs on him after he got out of jail. He had been put in jail for a couple of years, and then he got out of jail, and there was an East Coast and West Coast gang, okay, of Black Panthers, and the East Coast kind of booted Newton and accused him of embezzling funds and using it to help himself rather than the cause. I don't know if any of that's true or not, but I remembered that there's a link between Huey Newton and the Black Panthers and one of our favorite characters, John Brockman. This is covered in many places, but in this Dazed magazine from January 2012, he talks about it. He says, he parted ways with the Yippies but stayed connected to the radical left, regularly visiting his friend Huey Newton, chairman of the Black Panther Party in Oakland, California. I first met Huey, says John, through a Hollywood connection who was backing him and wanted me to meet him. He was absolutely brilliant. Brockman says that they would discuss strategy and politics. But Brockman distanced himself from Newton once it became clear that he had murdered people. Another interesting thing, though, about Huey Newton is that he used this third way. He was a prime example of this civil society NGO thing, which actually just brings people, oftentimes, into the radical left. You see here, this little paragraph is all about how he started the Oakland Community School and the Free Breakfast for Children program, all for kids and teenagers. It says, I tried to transform many of the so-called criminal activities going on in the street into something political, although this had to be done gradually. That's exactly what Mark Bray talks about doing too. Mark Bray is I don't know what he calls himself, Black Rose, whatever that is, anarchist, anarcho-communist maybe? Mark Bray is a professor at Dartmouth, and he loves Antifa. He always talks about it. He always sings its praises. He's written a book about it. And he says that he went to Occupy to do exactly what Huey Newton just said there. Wanted to move them over into radical politics, and he did it slowly. Exact same thing as Huey Newton. Mark Bray. All right, what's next for you? Oh, yeah. Surprise! There's connections between the Black Panthers and North Korea. It says, in the late 1960s and early 70s, so the exact same time period as the FLQ and all this other stuff, North Korea, officially known as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and the Black Panther Party came together under the rubric of, quote, our common struggle against our common enemy. The leader of the BPP's international affairs sector, Eldridge Cleaver, often lauded the DPRK as an earthly paradise. The motivations behind this alliance, both of Pyongyang and the BPP, have never been clear, says the author. This is from the Wilson Center. I don't know if I've done a good job today so far. Can you see what the motivations were? Is it any clearer to you? They are all Marxist-Leninist revolutionary cells in that structure I showed you. They don't maybe even realize at the time that they're connected, but they are. Have none of these people ever stopped to ask themselves where the money's coming from, really? How they do get out of jail sometimes? Who is paying their legal bills? Like, what's the end game? They probably don't. They probably don't. They don't call them useful idiots for nothing. I'm sorry, deadheads. In 1971, the Grateful Dead played a benefit concert for the Black Panther Party. Grateful Dead benefit, March 5th, 1971. Sorry, guys. Okay, now we're going to get into the Q posts. December 23rd, 2017, Q posted. 2011 shuttle program terminated by Hussein. U.S. loses space dominance. Iran nuke deal. North Korea nuke missile tech. SpaceX. NASA tech to Elon Musk. Hillary Rodham Clinton's special access programs on her private server. Connected. Money, 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 money into their pockets. Eye of Ra. And it's just this moment I'm noticing the similarity there. I'm noticing the similarity in the symbol. Left eye marker. Symbolism, evil, stupid, justice. That post brings together a lot of the things I've been talking about. Doesn't it? For me, I go back and read Q posts now. And they are unraveling before my eyes. They're coming together, but the code is unraveling to reveal what maybe the Q group was really talking about in the first place. More Q posts. This one from January 19th, 2018. Why are American taxpayers subsidizing Tesla? Welfare for the rich. Why? Private emails, Google, North Korea, Tesla. The memo is only the beginning, the shot heard round the world. February 13th, 2018, Q posts, Operation Merlin Tech, Iran, North Korea, Iran deal funding, Iran, North Korea, T-cells, payoffs, NK nuclear, mini SUC, ICBM SUC, war engine, protection. Okay. I don't understand some of those things. Operation Merlin was something that was done in the Clinton administration. I think it's that they gave Iran nuclear technology, but it was booby-trapped technology, meaning they could never make it work. I think that's what that's about. The mini SUC and ICBM SUC, I don't know what that means. I know intercontinental ballistic missile, but I don't know this SUC part. If somebody could let me know in the comments. T-cells, that's a weird one. Because we're talking about nuclear stuff. So, can you tell me in the comments, does T-cells have something to do with nuclear weapons? Because if it doesn't, what are they talking about there? And then we're on to viruses. And I don't know if I've made a video with this in, or just said on Twitter, I said, what if, like, there's the, oh no, it was in my video, the Corona spy technology, those machines, and then the Corona spy satellites, and then the Corona virus. And I've also speculated that you could maybe uranium has uses that we don't understand. Because this rush for uranium in a world that we are told is denuclearizing, it just boggles my mind. So, does it have something to do with health? I don't know. I'm just speculating. Next. Oh, get ready for this. All right. Look at the dates of these two posts. January 19th, 2018. February 13th, 2018. Right smack in the middle of these two posts, the New York Times puts out the weirdest headline. Check this out. SpaceX, North Korea, Black Panther. February 6th, 2018. SpaceX, North Korea, Black Panther. I didn't even read the article. Well, I read the article, but they weren't linking things together the way I'm doing. Still, those words are linked together. And the whole SpaceX thing takes on a new dimension if you know that Elon Musk's grandfather was the head of the technocracy movement in Canada. That's him there. Joseph, or I forget his name, Haldeman, I think. Elon Musk's been asked about his grandfather, and he avoids answering the question honestly. He doesn't lie and deny it. To my knowledge, nobody's ever asked him. But he doesn't tell the truth about it. All right, moving on. Another Q post from March 27, 2018. Why did Kim travel to China? Why was travel impossible in the past? What changed? What constitutes the need for a face-to-face meeting versus a secured call? What U.S. publicly traded company previously entered North Korea to establish comms? Think logically. Why did Google visit North Korea? Why would the former chairman and CEO himself of Google Alphabet personally attend? And here he is here, Eric Schmidt, in North Korea. Who is Sergey Brin? Where was Sergey born? Sergey Brin is like the biggest, toppest dog in Google. And he's from Russia. He was born in Russia. Track the family, in quotes, important. Think Cold War. Think KGB. All right, his family includes Susan Wojcicki from YouTube and her sister, Wojcicki, I don't remember her name, Anne, from 23andMe. Those things are severely... They're dominating tech right now, aren't they? And they all have communist country roots, all of them. And they're connected to each other as a family now. Because Sergey is married to one of them. US, China, North Korea. Facebook data dump? Who made it public? Who sold shares less than 30 days from the announcement? You can't imagine the magnitude of this. Constitutional crisis. Twitter coming soon. Google coming soon. Amazon coming soon. Microsoft coming soon. Plus 12. 12 more coming soon. The graphic is getting crazier. And you got to remember when we talk about John Brockman, he's got his claws into all of these companies here. The Washington Post, Amazon, that's Bezos. Microsoft, Twitter, YouTube, 23andMe, Google. This guy hosted those billionaire dinners with all those people who attended multiple years, multiple times. And there's photographs of them all over the place. They're all together. And who did John Brockman create those billionaire dinners with? Who helped fund those? What connection was made at those billionaire dinners? The connection of all of those people. To Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein with his little black book of people who may or may not have been filmed either in his New York place, or his New Mexico place, or his Virgin Islands place, or his Palm Beach place, having sex with underage girls. Or maybe boys. We haven't heard anything about that, but who knows? Do you see why Q might say, you can't imagine the magnitude of this? Do you see how this connects back to the radical cells and the radical science and the regimes that were communist, Marxist, overtaken by revolutionaries? And you saw earlier that the United Nations and the EU both support civil society organizations, which often end up in revolutions. Is that what's happening here? Well, to me it's obvious. I mean, you could have Antifa here. You can have the Native protesters, the First Nations protesters here. You can have the Black Power protesters here. You can have the environmental protesters here. And they farm out to the anarchists, and they all have each other's backs. And this is their cover, civil society. But this is their real goal. Who is here? I think we're going to find out through the Q posts and the slow news that's unlocking the Q posts is slowly coming out. It's a worldwide global network of super oligarchs that are in the middle of that wheel, hidden by layers of civil society and NGO organizations. And just to, before I do the final wrap-up, you know what? I checked it out. What's happening in Algeria right now? Because if you remember, Algeria, the guy from Belgium had just been in the Algerian Revolution, and then he came over and started the crap with the FLQ, stirring up all the people in Quebec that led to our own revolution. I checked. What's going on in Algeria right now, I wonder? This article, I can't believe it, from 2019. The Algerian Revolution, leave means leave. And they are using slogans referring back to the revolutionary anti-colonial struggle of the FLN, which is exactly the group that trained the FLQ, and that Georges Schuttel, or Schuiters, or whatever his name is. Uh-huh. To me, it's all one thing. And the news continues to hide the fact that the blockade protesters in Canada are not Canadian. Nothing about it in the mainstream news. I think it would change people's perception of what's happening. It would give them the truth. I don't think anybody would say, oh yes, I'm on the side of foreign-funded insurgents. If they waved the flag of the countries they were from and stood on our railway tracks, they would be seen as committing an act of war. But because they hide behind NGOs with these causes that have been drummed into people's heads with the progressive agenda, because they pretend, they literally fake that they are indigenous people. They fake it. And when it's obvious they aren't indigenous people, they say they're in solidarity with the indigenous people. Meanwhile, as I showed you, the real indigenous groups, all 20 heads, are against these protests. So once again, we have the fake news spectacle. The news is the most powerful organ of these revolutionaries, and something needs to be done to shut them down. They should not be allowed to lie. Okay, wrapping up. The Marxist-Leninists, I don't know if they're communists. I believe it's starting to look like the end of the Second World War pitted the communists against the capitalists. I've shown you in the Project Rusty that that was the plan at the end of the war. They describe it. Declassified CIA documents describe that. So there would be these two sides warring, and the Iron Curtain keeps them from communicating clearly towards each other. And in the meantime, up the middle, just like a narcissist always triangulates, up the middle come these whatever they are. What are they? Are they the remnants of the Nazi regime? Are they the Marxist postmodernist people without a country? You know who I mean? That started their great revolution by hiding within another group. That group that they chose was the Jewish group. They hid in there. And they're still hiding in there. And now they're hiding also in NGOs and civil society. But really what they're after is global revolution. They want to take one territory after the next. It's obvious to me at this point. And if you think about it that way, you got to know they have a militant arm, they have an administration arm, they will have a PR arm, they will have a cultural arm, and that's where someone like John Brockman comes in. Huey Newton was in the militant arm. John Brockman would be in the public relations arm, and he's taken on the science. He's going from a science angle. And then, of course, you've got people like Eric Schmidt, who are in the pop culture / technological control arm, the tech arm. That's the real workings of this. Well, I know it's been a long one, going through Canada's problems all the way to bigger and bigger problems, and then the Q posts and all of it. But I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've got something out of it, because I'm going to stop talking now. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. I would appreciate a thumbs up and a comment. And if you would like to support my work, I would very much appreciate you go to my website, get my P.O. Box address. I'll put the link in the description box and in the pinned comment. And if you would rather do it through technology, I have a PayPal.me account. PayPal.me/PaulieSt.George. So either one of those ways is great. I can accept.
Well, this is Paul Fraw. Back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on AltRightTV.com.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never, our watchword ever.